The following is a replay of a live show that aired Wednesday, May 1st at 5 o'clock p.m. The opinions expressed do not reflect the opinions of the University of Wisconsin-Madison or its Board of Regents. Thank you so much for listening and enjoy. Hello all, and welcome to the penultimate edition of After Further Review on WSUM 91.7 FM Madison. I'm Vincent Hesbrick, here joined with my, for the second last time live in the studio, my good friend Alex Schuster. I really think stop moving the microphone.
It's moving by itself, and I'm trying to just get it to stay in a good location here, but that's not going to happen.
I really think that does sum it up. Just seconds before the intro was playing, I was trying to get my headphones off the stand and put it on. I really think that does sum up the show down the stretch, is just like frantically trying to throw stuff together. But I've had a blast in the process, and I'm sad that we only have one more live show after that. I don't think we'll be having our last show on next week, as Alex spins the spinner, or it won't be next week Wednesday at 5, because you have your graduation. That'll be, should be a ton of fun.
Yeah, well, actually, I have an exam that day, and then it got moved because I have graduation the following day. But yeah, thank you for shouting that out there. But I'm kind of disappointed not to keep the regularly scheduled program going, but still get time on the air, so yeah. Always a good thing.
It'll be on the interweb at some point anyways, but that'll dive into Rate My Take. We came here with some opinions. Alex just spun the spinner. And looks like we won first, right?
Yeah.
Awesome. So, yeah, Bucks, fantastic win last night. I'm sure we'll be talking about that quite a bit. But the big piece or narrative following was that both Dame and Giannis obviously missed the game with respective injuries. Hopefully they can play in game 6. We're going to need them in that hostile environment in Indiana. But the Bucks became the first team in the history of the NBA to win a playoff game without their top two scorers. Did you see that, Alex?
I did see that. I got a notification late last night while I was working on homework, and I had to stop and look through of like just how impressive that really is, especially when you have Dame and Giannis as your two leading scorers. The drop off there makes, I think, even more incredible. Like, it wasn't like a couple points here or there was the difference between this guy being their leading scorer and their third leading scorer. They were head over heels, the top two there.
Yeah, and I was trying to do my research, trying to find out how many teams actually have had a playoff game where they're missing their top two scorers. That feels like something that doesn't happen all too often. Unfortunately, I was unable to, but I was just thinking about what would need to happen for a team to win a playoff game without their top two scorers. Because usually, look, I mean, anything can happen in basketball, but when the playoffs come in, when teams are fully locked in, the best team usually prevails. I say usually because it's playoffs. I mean, we play the games for a reason. But for the most part, I'd say that in more than half this series, you can be very confident who's going to win. And the Bucks without Dame and Giannis, that'd be a very confident Pacer victory most of the time. So if a team wants to win, and you got to think they're playing a pretty bad opponent. Pacers, I mean, look, no one's picked them to win the championship, but if they take down the Bucks in game 6 or game 7, you can't say they don't have at least a chance against the Knicks or the inconsistent Philadelphia 76ers. Maybe you wouldn't, you know, pick them to win, but the Bucks had 49 wins. Pacers had 47. So this isn't like a 1 versus an 8. These are two teams that are fairly evenly matched, and the Pacers were picked by many to win this series even before Giannis was officially ruled out. So yeah, I think, okay, they don't, not playing a team that's really bad. Maybe the Bucks are just a super team. Nope. They're kind of built for those top two scores. They don't have a lot of bench depth, even though they were playing Danilo Gallinari, getting minutes off the bench. All sorts of cast of characters were coming in and doing their part. So, yeah, that wasn't it. So I got to think then, all right, well, if they're not very deep and they're not playing a super talented opponent or a super bad opponent, you got to think that their third option is pretty good. And I would say bingo. Chris Middleton deserves all the props. I think we got to start giving him his flowers. He has been fantastic for the Bucks, not just throughout this playoffs, but through this year as a whole. I think, I'm not sure if I talked about this before, but I remember there was a joke like in the height of the Bucks drama, and it showed like speech bubbles of different like outlines of players, and it was like Dame Lillard saying like Milwaukee stinks, it's miserable here, and Giannis saying everyone's got to be better, the equipment manager's got to do stuff better, and then Doc saying this isn't my fault, I don't know what's going on, and it showed a speech bubble of Chris Middleton that was just empty. And I thought that was pretty funny. But I really think that it goes to show just how professional Chris Middleton has been. You talk about the different sacrifices that players have been making. You could argue that Chris Middleton has been making the most because he's a guy who would shoot way more in past seasons. His shooting is basically at, we talk about, an all-time low, except for his, I think you got to go back to his third season in the league in 2014-15 season. He was 23 years old. The last time he shot this infrequently. But it's not that he's not inefficient. He's having his second most efficient season of his career, and he is the league's most efficient mid-range shooter by a full 7%. I think he's shooting 60%. Second place is Kevin Durant with 54% or 53, something like that. But he's just been fantastic. He's been willing to sacrifice throughout. So it raised a lot of eyebrows when the Bucks gave him a $30 million a year deal and gave him an extra, I think it was 3 or 4 years on the extension. Just like, he's a guy who gave you 15 points last year, and it's just 15 this year. But you don't really pay a guy based off the total number of points they're getting. Because if you give enough players a green light, everyone in the NBA is talented. We've seen players come out of nowhere and drop 50 bombs all the time. I think that the fact that Chris Middleton has 15 points is not a sign of his decline. It's a sign to his commitment. And I think that we're getting proof of that in this postseason because he has really taken the reins. Right now, you look at the leaders in playoff scoring, you can see all the big stars here. But then, ahead of Kevin Durant, James Harden, Paolo Banchero, Jamal Murray, Pascal Siakam, who led the playoffs in scoring through two games, is Chris Middleton, slated in 12th, giving the Bucks 27 points per game to go along with a decent number of rebounds, 9.4, and 5 assists. So he's been lower on production. That's because he's been willing to sacrifice, and he hasn't said a single darn thing all year. And when the Bucks have needed him most, he has shined. I was really disappointed we lost Game 3 because he really, we used the phrase left it all out there very loosely, but he couldn't even brace either ankle. He hurt one, got taped off, and he couldn't limp because he hurt the other ankle. So he was like limping on both legs, and he still gave the Bucks 40 points, multiple clutch threes, did not wind up with a win, but he was just immaculate last night. And I think it was really surprising initially for a lot of fans when the Bucks gave Middleton that extension coming off of surgery, but I think you're seeing right now that he's still capable of being that guy.
I 100% agree. I mean, you don't pay someone that much money just based on, oh, you can drop 20, 25 points a game. I mean, the personality and character of him is crucial for what the Bucks are trying to establish. I mean, I would think that he is very favorable on Milwaukee and their organization after they did trade for him, got him out of Detroit.
Yeah, it wasn't like a throw-in, but he was, yeah, a G-leaguer.
Yeah, and brought him from Detroit to Milwaukee right about the same time. Was it the same year we got Giannis?
I have his stats pulled up here. Yeah, he came to Giannis 2013-14. I think that's when Giannis was drafted, so sure enough.
Yeah, so they came in at the same time. I would imagine there's a pretty strong friendship between the two. They've known each other the entire time they've been at the organization, and I mean, had a lot of success together, especially Chris Middleton. The moments where it matters the most, he's shown that he can do the impossible. The game sixes in our championship run, the just miracle threes. I don't know how any of those went in this Pacers series.
Oh, my goodness.
Forcing OT and then it doesn't make any sense. Like, he was totally covered. Was it the OT three or the...
Both, honestly.
Yeah.
but yeah, the craziest one was one that sent it to overtime.
Yeah.
It was basically almost a duplicate of the one he made to force overtime against the Celtics in 2018. Yeah, it's just been so crazy for him, and it's just been it's such a fun story to follow. But what's kind of frustrating is that we talk about how he's been willing to sacrifice, and he's not a public guy. I think he appeared on the J.J. Redick podcast this year. It was his first ever appearance on a podcast. He doesn't give any really quotes that are interesting to the media, and he's kind of just a low-key guy. But I was watching the post-game show last night, or Inside the NBA, and Charles Barkley said that Chris Middleton is this generation's Jamal Crawford, and Shaq said, stop it. And they're like, oh, come on. But I really think that we just kind of understate just how great Chris Middleton is, because he's objectively, in my opinion, better than Crawford, just looking at the efficiency, the points. But because they were talking about how Crawford's got the step-back ability, the highlights, and give you the big game. But Milton, it's no flash. All it is.
Speaking of no flash, I just looked up his social media followers. Guess how many he has.
It's so low. It's like 20,000.
Yeah, I'll combine them. No, it's a lot more than that. It's a little over half a million combined between Twitter and Instagram.
Yeah, I was thinking just Twitter. But
yeah.
Yeah, he just, and then there's Danilo Gallinari has over, like, I think a million on Twitter. So, yeah, he just walks up and shoots shots, and they go in more frequently. You call a guy a hooper, and I think that people often refer to, like, the bag a player has and their ability on the court. I think of it more as just, like, your commitment to the game of basketball. And you look at Chris Middleton, what he's willing to do and not do to help his team, I just think that he deserves so much more credit than we give him.
I 100% agree. I think you've said it a couple times.
I have.
your favorite players on the Bucks. He was obviously up there. I mean, Giannis is my number one by far, but Drew Holiday, like the personality and everything, like defense, I loved him when he was with the team. So I kind of did put him above Chris Middleton, and I might have made a mistake with that one, just overlooking the greatness of Chris Middleton.
Well, knocked away and stolen by Holiday is one of the more iconic moments in Bucks lore. But yeah, I mean, Chris quietly kind of led the way on offense against the Hawks in that series, dropped a 40-point game in the finals. Just
kept us alive.
Yeah, love the guys who sacrificed. Want to make a note? I mean, penultimate show. I'd say that you have someone like Chris Middleton who just kind of shows up, does his thing. Alex, I think you're the Chris Middleton guy. I mean, you got a lot of stuff going on, and you've been here just about every single show. And whenever you're not, in the brief occasion you're not here for a show, no disrespect to our guests, who I all love, but the show is just objectively not as good when you're not here. And I know we're going to be reminiscing about the show quite a bit on our final show, but I just want to say one of my favorite moments was when we did a 2-hour Christmas special, and I had nothing left to say. I finished my story, we still had 20 minutes left, and then you come stumbling into the studio to tell me that Kadarius Toney is like the guy in Retro.
Oh, gosh, I forgot about that. the max aggression, max speed, max catching, but just the most disgruntled player of all time.
Yeah.
For no reason.
So I've gone back and I've been watching a lot of just getting ready for next year's show. I've been listening to a lot of old ones, and I'll be think times like, oh, I think I was kind of like, I talk too much here and there, and no matter how many people we have on, no matter what we talk about, you've always been consistently great on the show. So when I say that you are like Chris Middleton, I mean that as the ultimate compliment, my friend.
Coming from you, it definitely means a lot. I mean,
well, you think I have super high standards? Well,
your standards for Chris Middleton are incredibly high.
Yeah, and I guess
then
so.
Also moving that over to myself, then I would say like, I mean, maybe just overlooked a little bit. You miss the greatness. You got to look back and reminisce a little bit to see just how high quality of content we produce here.
Oh, man. Yeah, well, I mean, gosh, 20 minutes in the show.
I forgot to rake it.
Oh, yeah.
Rate your take as well. I think I got to go with a solid 8.5 on this one.
I'll take it.
I do have to say the contract might have been a little bit of an overpay, but at the same time, you do have to acknowledge that, but he is the type of player that you do overpay, which is fine. It's the opposite of a hometown discount, where the team is paying the player to stay right where he is.
It's interesting because he's making $30 million this year, $31 million the year after that, and then $34 million in year 25, 26. And you could say, yeah, that maybe that's an overpay, but it's like if he was on the open market this year, he would probably get a contract similar to that, if not more.
Especially after the cap change.
That's an excellent point with the CBA expanding. So it's like, yeah, maybe it's an overpay, but if everyone would have overpaid for him, is it really that much of an overpay? It's probably just a penalty for keeping your guy around. But respect to 8.5, go ahead.
All right. I also have a somewhat Bucks-related take here. This is my petition to big sports media to try and stop pressuring Giannis to leave Milwaukee. Just cut it out. He's happy here. Just keep him here. He got a championship for us. We only really needed one, realistically. It'll be an icon forever. We want more. It goes without saying. But at the same time, he's here to stay. Just stop. Just leave him alone for a little bit. Focus your efforts on something truly beneficial, like getting LeBron James to enter free agency and then force some team to draft his son and so they can play together. I mean, that would be so much more entertaining. Giannis and the Bucks, I mean, they're under a lot of pressure for their bold choices with Doc and Dame this year. It makes sense. It's mixed results year one. And so what? It's year one. That's the most important thing. In the most crucial moments, we haven't even been able to see what this team can do as it's currently constructed. I would assume that next year you'd add even more pieces and keep building. So why did the expectation get set at year one or bust? Why is all this media pressure on, like, oh my gosh, if we can't see it in the playoffs right now, the Bucks, they're going to collapse. They're not going to make it through the summer. One of these guys is going to start talking that he wants to leave. And I don't understand why that has to be the case in the NBA. I think it's a waste of time. It's a waste of breath. It's a terrible narrative, especially looking at the Bucks. If you really want to do that, start doing it to other teams. There's so many other players that are aging superstars or just at and passing the peaks of their career. And some of them have rings. If you look at the Warriors, they're trio of stars. The Lakers with AD and LeBron. Put a little pressure on those guys. The Suns with, I mean, obviously Booker didn't get a ring. He made it to the finals, so there's added pressure there. And then KD has two championships, hasn't done it without the Warriors. Maybe put a little more pressure there. He already left and it didn't work. Why are you going to force someone else to go into that same position? And then the Clippers with Kawhi, that's another team. They have the other superstars as well with Russ, Paul George, James Harden, guys that don't have their ring but have all the other accolades. Same thing with the 76ers and Joel Embiid, Jimmy Butler and the Heat, the Celtics, the Mavs, all these other teams. They haven't gotten their ring. They still have superstars. Why don't you put more pressure on them? Divert the attention over to them. Stop looking at a Bucks team that is at their lowest moment right now with their two superstars injured and trying to think that we have to draw all of our conclusions based on that. So something that's way more productive. Just start talking about LeBron James again. Go back to the well, the good old days. Oh, you never run out. Appreciate it while we have him. I mean, it's a perfect way to end his career, inevitably underperforming, and this time he has to blame his own son for losing. Role player that can't do enough.
Oh my goodness.
All the pressure is, I mean, it's always the teammates, right? And this time it becomes his son is the
teammate. His son's not his teammate this year.
It will be, though. In this world, we're pushing LeBron James to enter free agency. I don't know, maybe he goes to like Philly or something and they draft Bronny James in the first round. I mean, that would probably push his career earnings way past what they would have normally gotten. I mean, some team maybe he's planning on just doing, all right, what undrafted free agent, we'll take him on the roster, makes a little bit of money in the NBA.
What is your take?
Well, it was the one at the start. Now I'm just
I'm kidding.
Riling myself up with LeBron James, but we can cut that.
I'm keeping this all in there.
I was saying more just like, I'll stop going off on this, but I do think it would be so much more productive if we just start talking about all these what-ifs rather than what if Giannis left the Bucks.
Yeah, I do want to say I was messing with you. Alex is both a satirical and professional LeBron James hater, which I do very much appreciate. I'm sure that maybe we'll do that for our last show, 2 hours of going to bed.
I could do it. I mean,
I'm sure you could. But yeah, for your original point, I'm with you for the most part because it was just funny. I looked up Giannis the other day to see if he was going to play in, I think, game 4. First article that pops up, NBA trade rumors, Bucks Giannis discussed by teams with stockpiled NBA draft picks. And we see those articles so much, both not just last season when he said that he wants to, you know, put pressure the front office, even before then. Like, whenever the Bucks would not win the championship, the first thing was always, could Giannis demand a trade? And that the fact that it's going on before the season even ended now, it's incredibly frustrating. The reason why I'm not going to give you a super incredibly high mark is that I think that, to an extent, the media is putting the pressure, I don't think athletes follow it too much, but KD's definitely getting killed by people.
I think it's the recency of like, he just lost. He had that OKC Chet Holmgren whatever ad. So like it's in the air.
Yeah.
I think once if the Bucks lose, then that would be like kicked up just as much for the next couple weeks.
Yeah,
I don't even want to let that start. Just stomp it out now.
I love these articles that say that like teams are interested in trading for Giannis.
Of course, who isn't?
That's what always gets me so mad. Do you think that you talk to Charlotte and be like, hey, would you be interested in acquiring Nikola Jokic? They'd say, yeah, because who wouldn't?
Yeah.
It's just a similar boat. I really don't understand. I mean, no one was saying that Jokic should get traded when he was winning all those MVPs and yet coming up short in Denver. I don't understand why that's the case with Giannis in Milwaukee. But, for the most part, I'm with you. But I think that the media is doing a great job of trolling a series of players. So I'll give you I agree with the first part so much. I even gave my most energetic take that I've given was on Giannis was saying the Bucks should trade Giannis. But the second part, not with you as much. I'll give you a 7 out of 10, or 6.5. Actually,
I mean, I do think it's a lot more interesting. I mean, I'd rather think about that than Giannis leaving Milwaukee. That just makes me want to cry.
Yeah, and I feel like that. I don't even know why we're talking about a Giannis trade, but. Just the fact that I think the Damian Lillard trade was an automatic win because it got Giannis to extend. I don't just say that because like the Bucks would be irrelevant without him, but when you add more years on Giannis' deal in some hypothetical bizarre where they do have to trade Giannis, suddenly he's more valuable for that reason.
And that was a big thing that I missed in mine, I think, was like all those players that I named a lot of them are either coming up on their contracts or they're expiring around the same time. Like LeBron, that's a big thing of LeBron right now. Like he actually is a free agent. He has, like he's in the position where he has to make a decision like that. Giannis isn't. It's not the same at all. It makes way more sense to put that pressure on the Lakers, on the Suns, all these other teams. Keep the Bucks off that list. It's year one. It's not like we've seen Dame and Giannis three times in the playoffs get swept by the Nuggets. All these different things. We haven't even seen them together in a playoff series yet.
Yeah, I'm with you. It kind of reminds me of Kyrie and Luka, where like it just didn't work last year. It's like, well, what are the Mavs going to do now? And they're like, well, what we're going to do, we're just going to get better through internal development. And obviously the Mavericks could still hypothetically get eliminated in the first round, but they're just so much clearly a better team compared to last year. But so, yeah, I believe a second year Dame and Giannis would do wonders. But in the meantime, there's playoffs going on. And with that, we'll take it to, what are we calling it?
Badger Sports Update?
I don't know. We'll come up with a better name next week. We've got a quick touch on softball. We took 2-3 against Indiana, but the first game was a killer, leading 5-0 going to the bottom of the fifth inning, wound up allowing 6 runs over the last 3 innings and dropping game 1. That being said, we did take a game 2, which was a thriller, that one 8-6, closed it out on Sunday 7-1. So a growing year for the Badgers as a whole. I'm trying to scroll up to see their record. 19-27 overall, 8-12 in conference. They were, I believe they're like 3-7 before that, 2-7. So yeah, a nice little run for them. Got closed out against a very good Maryland squad this weekend. And then that will do it for not just softball team, but for WSUM home games as a whole. Last series of the year. So I won't be there this weekend. I'll be home, but I wanted to not plug it, but mention that that will be going on. And with that, should we take it to break?
Let's do it.
Awesome. Don't go anywhere, though. We'll talk about our draft reactions. Got some bold predictions to grade. Oh, my gosh. That is quite the story. I can't wait to talk about that one. And then what else are we doing? We're talking some NBA playoffs. So don't go anywhere.
Hey, Jay, what are you doing?
I'm going to walk.
But, Jay, the light is red. What if there's a car?
You know I don't believe in cars. I'm going to walk.
Jay, please.
I'm doing it.
He really put the L in walk.
Let's not be like our ex-friend Jay. It's well known that Wisconsin ranks 46th in the country for jaywalking-related accidents. And with your participation, we could be 47th.
Here are some tips to help you obey pedestrian traffic laws. Often find yourself restless at a red light? Carry around a fidget toy or a snack. Look left and right, then left again. Repeat as necessary. Hold hands while crossing the street. If still inclined to break the law, ask a friend to restrain you. Remember, you can't walk if you're hit by a car.
Wise words from a wise man you're listening to after further review on WSUM 91.7 FM Madison. Vincent Hesbrick with Alex Schuster. And we'll dive into laundry list. Alex, you have anything for us?
I didn't have a chance to actually read through the story, but I'm pretty sure we have the most interesting sports rivalry of all time, U.S. Congress versus Formula One. I think Congress is making some sort of appeal to Formula One, wondering why the like Andretti, which is the Cadillac, basically like that same brand family, but like the company that owns that was trying to get into Formula One, submitted a bid to join in 2026. It was denied, and now Congress wants to know why. They're taking the fight to Formula One and trying to get some answers there.
Oh, wow. So what's going to happen with that?
I have absolutely no idea right now. It's still early stages of it, but it is kind of interesting. Like they were looking to expand with two new teams, with Audi and Cadillac were going to be the two. I mean, there's other manufacturers bidding, but those are like the two key ones that actually made sense for them to join the grid. Both got turned down, and Audi ended up switching to just buy an existing team and become a part of the sport that way. But they weren't able to add extra cars to the grid, which, I mean, it kind of makes sense. You don't want to like add extra traffic. There's only 10 teams that finish in the points right now. There's no point in adding another two teams that are assumingly going to be irrelevant for another 5-10 years. So trying to avoid that kind of makes sense, but also a little frustrating. Could have been another American manufacturer in Formula One.
So you're saying F1 wants to expand, but like it wouldn't be practical, but it'd make a ton of money, you're saying?
Yes, definitely. And all the teams would make a ton of money too, but I think they have to have the teams vote them in, and I'm wondering if a lot of those mid to lower field teams do not want extra competition joining the grid, and the bigger teams would just say, all right, give us the money,
yeah,
you're not going to beat us anyway.
Beat us. Yeah. You're going to be that mad for that long. I can have a billion teams racing. But you mentioned, like, is it unsafe having even more cars on the road, or is it just kind of is what it is?
Definitely unsafe, especially at starts. You switch from 20 to 24 cars on the grid. At the back of the grid, there's more room for someone to make a mistake at some point during the race, more stoppages, all that sorts of things. They have had more than 20 cars, but I feel like they got a good number right now. It doesn't make sense to try and push it, but it would have been nice to see another American manufacturer.
Yeah, we're totally cool being biased against the USA, baby. If there's anything the show's taught me, it's that F1 is completely insane. I swear, they have we consider the NBA to be the drama thing, but I really think that in terms of drama per day, I think F1 has it beat.
I would say so. I mean,
this is the government.
Yeah. it's a very bizarre situation. Also, the fact that they're like making all these races in the U.S. and then not adding another American team is a little bit confusing, but I mean, who knows? Never say never. They could always get introduced down the line or take the Audi route and just buy a team, but you never know.
There you go.
Something to keep your eye on, at least.
Very mysterious stuff going on in a very spooky sport.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing is that now it's leading it. Next upcoming race is Miami Grand Prix, so on home turf is pretty exciting.
Yeah, so you're going to have to get up like 4 in the morning to watch.
Which will be very exciting, but I'm worried that I'm going to have a final or something the exact same time.
Yeah. Well, we already had some final bad luck with us, so hopefully the schedulers can take it easy on you this time. I'll jump into a couple discussion points here. We were trying to do some planning yesterday for our show. We get together and do a call beforehand, and Bucks game was on. We did not get anything done, honestly. We just about started talking midway through the third, watched the rest of the game, had no notes. But I was about 4 seconds behind you, Alex, maybe a little bit more than that. So it got us thinking, would you rather be ahead of the person or behind them? Because I think that the first person who knows the action before the second person, they've got a ton of power in that spot.
They have power, but with great power comes great responsibility.
that was the best thing you could have said.
You got to remember how passionate everyone is when they're watching. And I did make a concerted effort not to spoil too many
things.
You
were great. You really were.
I did say a few things of like, oh, get ready, like knowing when someone was going to steal a ball and get a fast break. Bobby had a couple of those especially. It's also unfortunate when you have that in your mind and you're like, all right, I don't want to ruin this for someone else, but I don't really care that much. I just want to celebrate the game. Like, it's not my fault that my internet happened to be a couple seconds faster.
Yeah.
And now I get the blessing of this game a few moments before you.
Well, I think because on one hand, it could be annoying for like something to happen. Then like 10 seconds later, you just hear someone go, in your spot. But I think it could also be pretty funny, like that little delayed reaction before I start losing my mind.
When you got to be very careful, because if you say something wrong, then they definitely know that you made a mistake, because then they're looking for like word for word your description of the events.
Yeah.
And if you say something wrong, you're like, that's not what happened at all.
So what would you rather be, ahead or behind?
Definitely ahead.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, cool. Glad we agree.
Yeah. Well, the worst is if you're like, I think it depends on how much time. Like a couple seconds isn't the end of the world. It's definitely frustrating, but like if it's happening like up to 5 seconds afterwards, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
I think once you get from that range up to like, if you get to a minute behind, like then you have problems. Then you have problems.
I'm with you. We'll jump into. So we've done multiple bold prediction games. We had an MLB one. We're predicting how it would go through April. Surely I can take down Alex, since Alex doesn't watch baseball. Then we did one with the draft as well. So we came with some predictions. The level of how bold the prediction was graded by an independent adjudicator. And if that prediction came true, you get the number of points assigned to that. So more bold to take, more points you get. So I got the rundown here. Let me switch. Man, I got so many documents and tabs open. It stresses me out. So in baseball, it was pretty wild. You had or I feel like I was doing pretty well here. Freddy Peralta will be top 10 strikeouts. That was only graded a 1 out of 5, which I guess it makes sense. Pitched a lot of innings. That came up true. He was ranked 7th currently in the league with 45 strikeouts. And then Marlins have the worst record in the NL. That also came true, although it was also just 1 point once again. I think the problem with the scoring is that there was a bit of a gap between when it happened and when it was scored. So us saying the Marlins are going to be like that bad, I think we kind of like were ahead of the curve. By the time they were graded, like 5 games gone by and they lost all 5 of them. At that point, it's like, wow, bold prediction, buddy. But this is where it got interesting, because you said Brewers lead NL Central. That was awarded a 1. Mariners 5 wins or less. I think they got 6. Just barely missed out on that one. Record home run count through the first month. That did not happen. Nor did Shohei Ohtani getting suspended. But it came down to this. At least 3 fights between teams that involved contact between players. That was the key part. Because if they just yell at each other, that is what it is. But when players are pushing, that's just an actual, I'll say, tussle. And I also had Yankees have the most wins in baseball to get me 3 points. And yours was 2 for the pushing. So we're tied at 1. I'm trying to do the math here in my head. No, I had 2 and you had 1. So I was winning going into yesterday. So the Yankees, going into yesterday, they had 19 wins along with 6 other teams. The Guardians, the Orioles, the Braves, the Dodgers, the Phillies, and the Brewers. All right? And then last night, facing a 9th inning deficit, the Phillies scored 3 runs in the 9th to beat the Angels and get win number 20, just barely knocking that one out. But I still had a lead over you, and there were only 2 fights in baseball. So I still had this one locked up, or so I thought, because my own Milwaukee Brewers started a brawl against the Rays to get you fight number 3, thus giving you 2 more points and beating me 3-2 in the bold prediction game. Congratulations, Alex.
Thank you. I made all my predictions based on just things that if I was watching a baseball game, I would want to see these things.
You
want to
see Shohei get suspended.
I do think that would be a great story to talk about. Funny. It would be very funny. Like, yeah. The best baseball player right now is just the biggest gambling addict of all time. Makes a little bit more sense that it's just his interpreter. A little less fun. Just I feel bad for him now that
I feel bad for Shohei, too. I feel like he has trust is
I mean,
shaken.
What, just millions of dollars as well? Like that.
Absolutely. I want to quick say that there's been 4 total confrontation between teams in baseball: Brewers and Mets, Rays and Blue Jays, Brewers and Orioles, Brewers and Rays. There's been 4 fights. The Brewers have been involved in 3 of them. What is going on? Then we'll jump into draft. So do you have your predictions pulled up?
So the only 2 that I ended up getting right were the 7 wide receivers drafted in the first round, which I think was a 2 or 3. I didn't write down the numbers, unfortunately.
That was my big mistake.
7
receivers went in the first round?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean QBs and receivers?
No, just 7 receivers, and then I had 6 quarterbacks, which, funny enough, were the 2 that I got right. Wow. I thought that those were my boldest takes.
Yeah. I think the 6 quarterback one wound up aging. I mean, because quarterbacks were gone by pick, what was it, 12?
12.
Wow. Yeah, 1. Okay, Marvin Harrison got picked, Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, Brian Thomas, Xavier Worthy. Enough.
Yep.
7.
And then trading up for the last one at the end of the first round.
Yeah, that's a really great prediction there, Schuster. I feel like we're going to give you the win on this one, even though we don't have the official scoring. I had JJ gets taken over Drake May. That did not happen. 6 QBs we both had. That's a wash. Brock Bowers does not go in the top 15. So close. He went 13. No defenders top 10. I was given 3 points from when you and I just went over it. I was given 5 points, though, which I thought was maybe unfair from our good friend Jack Cohn. But I think, and then my last one was Broncos trade up for Bo Nix. They wound up being able to stay at their exact spot. Oh, Jack is with me right now. Jack, here, come in here, Jack.
Yeah, I had my other ones that didn't end up hitting was the first 3 picks aren't all quarterbacks, and Caleb Williams doesn't go number 1 overall. Those were probably the stupidest ones I had. And then Packers draft Braylon Allen, also a very big miss there.
So Jack just flew in the studio, just so happened to be in here. So Jack, it seems like you have something to comment on as you fight with the headphones. I just right next to the microphone.
I just wanted to say that my quarterback take was awful. I said 5 for that all 6 wouldn't go in the first round, and they were all gone by 12.
And what's so funny is you clearly knew more about the draft process than Alex and I. You know these players so well. We're just like, oh.
And that was the best part about the wide receiver one is you listed all the guys that were going to get taken as well. And you're, I think that one was ranked lower than the quarterback one. But
I was close on the wide receiver one, I think.
Yeah, you were very close. I think you got five out of the six. Or the five, or six out of the seven. Yeah.
I think it was five out of the seven because I said A.D. Mitchell.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, then, did you win?
Did I win what?
Did you have draft predictions
no,
with you?
But,
no,
but...
Oh, okay, I see. That, you just made some on the side, I remember.
Doing the actual names, though, might have won him that. Because if I win based on saying the seven wide receivers and he got six out of the seven of them, like... That's a lot more impressive.
Yeah, I think you. I mean, I was quite proud of my no defenders taking top 10 pick, but I think you picking seven receivers, that's got to give you the win. So I get swept. Did you hear about baseball?
No.
How he won because the Brewers got in a fight on the last day. We had won over how many fights there'd be in baseball. But
wow.
Yeah, you're welcome to stick around the rest of the show if you want, Ethan. That was just so funny seeing you behind the glass, like gesturing. But no problem.
I'll let you guys get back to your show.
Thanks for stopping in, though, Ethan. Good to see you. Yeah, excited to hear your show next fall.
Oh, yeah.
With that, we'll jump into a couple things about with the draft. So I'm kind of done with being disappointed with who the Packers pick because our group chat was going crazy when they did not pick Cooper DeJean. That's what my high school friends wanted us to do. And plus, no one had heard of the offensive lineman initially who was picked. But we just keep hitting on picks. So it's like I can't really be upset or anything.
If you had to give the draft as a whole a grade, what would you give it?
Like the entire draft or the Packers? Yeah,
just the Packers.
I don't know what to give it because we don't know how any of these players will turn out.
But that's the point of draft grades is you're supposed to look stupid in a couple months.
Yeah, well, I mean, just looking back, if you go 4 years in the past and you can look up like what people gave...
The Russell Wilson was an F.
Yeah, exactly. And then they had like the 49ers taking Solomon Thomas like in the Mitchell Trubisky draft. It's like that was way up there. They got Reuben Foster. They were given like the best grade in the draft. Turns out neither one of those players wound up turning up. But if I was forced, I guess A-. But once again, I have no idea.
Yeah, I was somewhere in the B range, I think, is where we're at. The main reason for that was it seemed like everyone else in the division got, like, at least one big splash, and the Packers kind of miss. I mean, the Vikings get their quarterback, Lions trade up for the hometown guy, and Bears have the 1-1 quarterback. So it seemed like everyone else had just an obvious thing that they could point to, especially in the first round alone, and then we're kind of sitting there like, offensive linemen, see in four months.
The common talking point was that our guy fills a need. We legitimately need an offensive lineman, except people are saying, well, Cooper DeJean fills two needs. He fills cornerback and safety, but he can't play two positions at once. Like, I don't...
And also, if we have our quarterback, I think it's more important that we keep him on the field as long as possible. Yeah. We're already good at all the weapons points on our offense. You might as well keep him happy and then keep him safe as well.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I mean, Jordan Morgan said, like, right afterwards, like, I'm just honored to protect Jordan Love. And it's like, good answer, man. You're going to fit in nice here. I also like Javon Bullard, the safety in the second round who we got. Supposedly, he's like a complete menace, excellent in the run game. So, big hitter. Seems like he's going to fit really well into Jeff Hafley's system. So, you expect a lot of playing time from him this year. But overall, I mean, we'll find out who's good and who's not in 2027.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of these Packers drafts, the guys I get the most excited about let me down every time. And then it's the guy I'm like, all right, like, let's see what he has. And then I'm like memorizing every detail I can about him because he's my new favorite player.
Yeah. With me. You randomly become attached to certain players. Yeah. My friend and I were big fans of Equanimeous St. Brown. We were thrilled when the Badgers took him. Wound up not being anything incredibly special, though he is still in the league and carving out a nice career. But it goes to show that it's almost like the people who are literally paid and their jobs depend on doing well in the draft know more about the draft than we do.
And the way the Packers do it, they owe like all positions of need, like shoring up the offensive line, getting two solid linebackers, and then also a little bit of secondary help. So just all around a solid draft. There's nothing that you can just immediately point at and complain about, but there's also nothing that you can immediately point at and get overly excited about.
Well, that's kind of what the draft is, though, because rookies rarely come in and make an impact, like, right away. That's usually rare. So
C.J. Stroud is the only one I can think of.
It's just, quarterback's going to be a complete game changer, but it's just frustrating seeing people like, well, now this team's going to make the playoffs because of their draft. Like, you're getting two starters at the absolute most. It's I don't know. That's definitely a slight at the Bears. But I'll talk about the shock of the draft, Michael Penix being taken. And I definitely see both sides of this one, because on one hand, you're paying Kirk for the next 4 years, a lot of guaranteed money on that deal. And he definitely, there are some positions of need, especially edge rusher. You're saying that you could maybe trade down and then get your guy, but instead you take a quarterback. But you just look at what, not even a fantastic, or not even a, yeah, not even a great quarterback, even just a good quarterback can get you in the trade market if they wind up becoming available. Like Deshaun Watson, he was top 10. You get three first-round picks for him. Same goes for Russell Wilson. That's three first. Now, obviously, the QB market has died a little bit because of those trades.
Nobody's paying three for Kirk.
Yeah, exactly. But if Penix is good, which the Falcons think he's good, then, like, you get your return on investment plus or times two.
I think there's no, if you draft a quarterback at eight, there's no way you're doing it thinking, hey, we can trade this guy for other pieces. That's like a late round quarterback. That's like a Spencer Rattler. Like, oh, he fell to us. Let's just see what, if he has anything. If he does, then we trade him. The first round quarterback is a guy that you're committing to now. So if anything, it's seeing what you can recoup on Kirk Cousins, get that deal off your book, and then you have your next guy if he pans out. I think that would be their avenue to go.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Maybe a year or two of Kirk, but like, yeah, your goal is to just make the playoffs with Kirk, and no one's quite considering the Falcons to be Super Bowl contenders. They're just saying they can make the playoffs, and if Penix is the guy that Atlanta thinks he is, then my goodness, the sky's the limit. So we'll see what happens. That being said, I didn't like the pick.
I didn't like the pick for their team, but for Penix, and I think it was the last thing we quickly ended the show of, what quarterback do you think is going to end up in the best position without giving any context? I said Penix, just thinking he would fall to a good situation.
You might be right.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, like, it's exactly what happened. Young weapons, a really, really weak division, especially right now. Who knows how that's going to be in 2 years when he comes back. But then he also gets that time to develop. And in the NFL, that can be the most important thing. Like, you go through all the quarterbacks that are at the top of their game, winning Super Bowls very early in their career. It's all people who sat for a while, or in their actual starting career.
Well, people are just copying the Packers at this point, because it's worked so well for them on three occasions, I think.
And then you also, like, Tom Brady not at, like, as long of sitting, and then Mahomes as well. Like, the two greatest quarterbacks.
Well, Mahomes he's so quick to credit Alex Smith for his development. And it's being a rookie quarterback is just so tough in the league, having that year to get stuff figured out. I guess the counterpoint is that Penix is 24 years old. He's older than a lot of quarterbacks who have been in the league for multiple seasons. But we'll see what happens.
I think he's like a year or two younger than Sam Darnold.
I'm going to have to look that up. In the meantime, we'll jump to the NBA playoffs for the last five-ish minutes we have here. Alex, you got to say we're seeing a bit of a changing of the guard here.
Yeah, he's 26.
Penix?
No, Darnold is 26.
Well, okay. Well, yeah, Penix is 24. But, 24 is like, he's older than
they would have been in high school at the same time.
And yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. He was drafted an entire 4 years ahead of him.
I lost my right. NBA. But yeah, you make a good point. Just those older players out there. I mean, he's almost as old as Xavier McKinney, who the Packers, once again, he played out his entire rookie contract and now got signed by the Packers to a deal. But I think we did say some misinformation a couple months ago that Bo Nix is older than McKinney. Turns out he's not. I got the year wrong on that one, which stunk. I really love that fun fact, but it was wrong. But it's okay. 2 months later, we can correct that. And now NBA playoffs. So we're kind of seeing the first year since, I think it was 2002, since LeBron, Steph, and KD, none of them made the second round of the NBA playoffs. And there's a lot of talk about players maybe moving around. I mean, Kevin Durant's always unhappy, it seems like. And as soon as the season ended, he said that, reports came out that he was not a fan of the fit. That only comes out because Durant wants it to come out. Like, that's kind of how I think the NBA media works. LeBron, it certainly seems like he's going to decline his player option. Frankly, why not if you're LeBron? And it doesn't seem like that Steph's moving. But what's interesting is that, let's just say hypothetically, I mean, can these players who are now aging, can they even win a ring anymore as the number one option, or think they need to have a co-star that's equal to their talents at this point?
I mean, it depends on what you consider the number one option. I think, I mean, like Jokic's situation. He's the number one option, but there's so many other pieces around him. I don't think if you put any of those guys in, even in that situation, like on the Nuggets and took Jokic off, I don't think any of those guys could win a championship with that team.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The Nuggets are so built for chemistry. And that's kind of been like, I read a really interesting article. I wish I could credit who wrote it. But it was comparing that the Phoenix Suns are very similar to the Miami Heat, the Heatles version of them, which is like, let's just get a ton of stars together who don't necessarily work super well together as a fit. Because I think the stat was that Dwayne Wade, LeBron, and Chris Bosh shot a career, or all three of them shot below 33% for their career when they joined Miami or when they joined up. And then I think that Booker, Beal, and Durant are all very high in the mid-range department. So the fits don't work, but they think, you know what, we're just going to out-talent people. And how that old NBA was kind of built for you to just kind of do that. But in the new NBA, where chemistry is king, you get these teams that don't have as much of that talent. They don't just stockpile it together. They instead like get those really great role players like Denver and Boston are doing. And that kind of seems like the new formula. So, I mean, maybe, look, if Steph, KD and LeBron would hypothetically team up. Not that that's going to happen. That would have to be your finals, like your contender. But I don't think that it would be the super team that people would think it is.
I don't think I'd even. It depends on what conference they're in. I think if they go out east, it's a lot more likely. But the West, like even like considering OKC, the Timberwolves, and Denver, if you put those three and made them compete with those like the KD, Steph, LeBron mystery team. If you put them in the West, I don't think they're a top three seed at all. And I think they would have a hard time in a playoff series against any of those teams. And then in the East, it's a lot easier, but you still have Boston. And, I mean, Milwaukee and Philly, like they're not terrible teams, but they're definitely up there of like even if you have those three superstars brought together, I'm not sure that it would work out.
Real quick before we jump into the next segment, where do you think LeBron's going this offseason?
I think he stays in LA. I don't think me too. Where else does it make
New
sense
York
for
and
the
Philadelphia.
Team? But for the team to like you're kind of just committing to LeBron right now. You might get a championship, but then like
well, he's won a championship everywhere he's gone.
Just keep building with what you have right now. Like the homegrown teams are the ones that are winning championships right now. I think you keep what you're like you have. Set a vision in mind for your team, and then you build towards that. And
we need an extra jolt, though. Like the Boston, they go get Porzingis. Denver go gets Aaron Gordon. The Bucks go scrap Jrue Holiday as their.
But it's LeBron. He's not a jolt guy. He is the guy.
Yeah, so he'd be even better to get.
But that's the thing is, in that situation, like as the guy, I don't think he can win a championship, and I don't think he's gonna go into that Carmelo Anthony role of like, all right, you're a starter most of the time, but when we. Your minutes back up after a while. I mean, I have to have you come off the bench every once in a while. Like,
yeah.
I don't think he's ready to make that sort of transition. And that would be what it would take, I think, for him to get a ring is him saying, all right, let me be number three or maybe even number four on a team.
That's okay. Three or four is mean. But I think that's a really, really, really compelling discussion point. For next week's show.
Definitely.
Last couple of minutes, though, Bucks are going to be – my season might be over by next time we record a show. Would hate to see it, but we could do a nice Bucks grades segment. But what are you thinking here down the stretch? Touched on a little bit. I mean, you think Dame and Giannis play game six?
I would hate for them to come back and then have something happen. So I'm going to say no. I think if it goes to a game seven, you're a little bit more willing to take that risk. But bringing them out just to lose in six, it would be more disheartening for media narratives and risking injury returning to like earlier than they are ready. It doesn't make sense to me.
Both listed as doubtful going into game six. Doc did say after the game that he considers both of them very, very, very close. That was his exact words. But I there's no way this team can. Okay, I shouldn't say there's no way because you never know. But I can't imagine this team going into. Indianapolis and forcing a game six. I think if we're going to win this series, we need to have those guys.
Oh, definitely. Without them, we have absolutely no chance. But then with them not at max capacity, I don't know that it's like a guaranteed competitive game even of like if you bring back an injured Dame or an injured Giannis and they only play a couple quarters and then their injury gets worse, was that worth it?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, but just from a fan perspective,
I want to see them so bad.
Yeah, me too. I mean, they can't go out like this.
The, the last, like, the this being the lasting memory going into the summer of, like, all right, we just had all of our role players play the entire game. Like, this felt like this feels like a tanking team right now.
Yeah,
like,
I love Danilo Gallinari, but he should not be getting 20 minutes.
No,
in
it's like
game.
It feels like the end of a regular season. It feels like we missed the playoffs more than actually making it, which is unfortunate. But I mean, if something does happen, I would never forgive myself for saying that he has to come back, though.
Real quick, final seconds. Do we win? Or I'm going to say Pacers take it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and but we cheering for him. And with that really depressing note, that'll do it for the penultimate after further review. Hope to see you next week, whenever the heck that is. But in the meantime, thanks so much for listening, and have a great rest of your day.